I'll just keep it on because I'll forget about it.
Okay.
Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Tell you, I feel like I am learning to fly today. I am going solo. This is Mark Heppner, live from Chicago Executive Airport. And, of course, it's 8 p.m. on Sunday night, and that can only mean one thing. It's Simple Flight Radio at 8 o'clock. And I'm looking across the way here, and I don't see my partner, Alex.
It's the real Alex.
It's the other Alex. So, you know what? I guess we're going to have a stand-in, and truly I'm going, not going solo, but it's my first time as PIC, and I'm looking at all of the little controls and knobs and lights and stuff, and I say, man, Al's got to deal with a lot.
You do a pretty good job with that here so far today.
So far, yeah. 1 minute into it, I'm doing fine, although I'm looking at it, it looks like I'm over-boosting myself, so I got to turn this little dial down.
Well, there was a lot of prep beforehand.
Yeah,
you were busy there.
Yeah, so something like that. So hopefully everybody can hear us. But, yeah, this is Mark Heppner, and this is Simple Flight Radio, broadcasting live from Papa Whiskey Kilo, the Chicago Executive Airport, or as we like to call it, Palwaukee. And joined tonight by Alex Katula, standing in for Alex Waterloo. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Can't complain. Weather's nice out. You know, a little cooler than usual, so I'm happy. I hate it when it's hot. It makes me crazy.
Yeah, you, Mr. Arizona. And right now, what are they dealing with, like in Death Valley, 130 degrees or something like that?
But December, it's not that way, so that's when I like to be there.
Yeah, smart. So tonight is going to be, I think, an interesting show. Of course, I always say that, but we are, I think, going to focus on age tonight because we have a guest that's going to be on a little bit. Have you been, Josh, have you been on the show before?
I have not.
All right. You were supposed to be, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. So Josh is going to be joining us. Josh Blaine, he's a 21-year-old guest. Do you remember, Alex, when you were 21?
I thought we were going to talk about how old you were.
Well, older.
Yeah, I remember when I was 21.
Yeah. It's not that it was that long ago.
22 years. Yeah, 22 years.
See, the way I work it is after I got to 39, then it was 30-10. So I'm up to 30-29.
Okay. Sounds good. When I was 30, I was taking the train home once with some guys from work, and they all asked me, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 39 years old. And they said, no, you're not. You're 40. No. Let's back it up again. Actually, I said I was 29, and they said I was 30. So I fought them tooth and nail that I was 29 years old. But when I actually did the math, I couldn't believe it. I really was 30 years old at that time. And I don't know how I missed that. And I was like, I lost a year.
I always tell people my first child I had when I was 30, and one of my neighbors said, no, you were 29. I said, no way. I know what I was. I was 29. I forgot.
Yeah.
So actually, we talk about forgetfulness, and that sometimes comes with age, and we're going to do age. So I wanted to start off tonight with a Sunday Night Chuckle. Now, normally, Al would introduce me, but he's not here, so I got to introduce myself. You know, Sunday Night Chuckle is something I do each Sunday, try to start off the moment a little bit lighthearted, and we did a lot of aviation jokes, and then they became kind of thinner and thinner in terms of availability, and started going the gutter. And decided that wasn't where I wanted to be. So, this one has to do with the age theme, so I thought it was relevant. So, Alex, I'm talking to you.
Okay.
All right. So, this is my goal. Other Alex I can make laugh very easily. Can I make you laugh?
You know, my problem is that it's the joke. I just laugh at dirty jokes. And the clean ones, I just have a big problem with it.
Well, maybe this will be cute.
Maybe cute's mine. I listen to you at home, and I'm just like, okay, I didn't laugh. And then if I'm here in the studio, I'm just like, yeah, that's cute, but it didn't make me laugh. Not like the joke that I got in the club the other day, which I know we can't tell here. But,
yeah, that's right.
But it's, that kind of stuff makes me chuckle.
Well, that's good to know. Well, maybe Josh will laugh. So, we're talking about age-related stuff here. And so this husband and wife were getting up in years. And so they went to the doctor because they were becoming very forgetful. Just like you didn't even know what age you were.
Right.
Right, so they went, and the doctor said, no, it's very normal to get forgetful as you get older. It's nothing to be worried about, and all I recommend is, from now on, why don't you write things down? So they agreed to write things down, and that night, the wife asked the husband, hey, could you go get me some ice cream, some strawberry ice cream? He said, sure, I'll go do that. And she said, well, write it down. He said, I'm not going to forget. I know you want strawberry ice cream. And she said, well, I want bananas on top of it. He said, okay, I got it. She said, no, you'll forget. Write it down. No, I won't. You're going bananas on top of strawberry ice cream. So then she said, but I want whipped cream on it as well. So he said, I got it. Don't worry. She said, write it down. He says, look, you want the strawberry ice cream with bananas and whipped cream on it. I got it. So she says, okay. He walks in the kitchen. He's gone 20 minutes. And he comes back with bacon and eggs. And she looks at him and said, where's my toast?
Okay. All right. She's just as bad as he is.
Oh, no. What happened?
You were getting so good at these buttons.
I know. I was getting good at these buttons. What'd I do? Oh, no. Let's see. Is it this one? Let me try that again. There we go. All right. I failed. Alex Waterloo, where are you when I need you? Josh, did you think it was cute?
I thought it was very cute.
Yeah.
It was cute. All right, I'll give it a kiss. It
made me laugh.
I'm a tough crowd.
All right, tweet in. It's hashtag Simple Flight. Let me know if you like that joke or not. I see we got some people coming in, but nothing about the joke yet, the Sunday Night Chuckle. Actually, you can hashtag SNC, but I'm not watching that. Maybe, Josh, you're my tweeter tonight. You can
sure, yeah.
See if something comes under the SNC Sunday Night Chuckle. So anyway, Alex, I haven't seen you in a long time. Have you been flying? You've been working? Where have you been?
I've just been a little busier lately. I mean, this week, the last week just at work's just been kind of busy. I mean, even though I'm just working out, trading out of the house, I mean, the market has just been pretty busy. So I just haven't really been able to get out here. Just been watching some stuff at night with the market. That's like why you seem to have it all with me again here tonight. But, so I've been a little focused on that here. I'm probably going to slow down here this week, and I'm going to have some time to get out here and go tool around a little bit. I haven't been up here lately. I think I went up for a joyride. It's got to be over a week now or something like that. And I haven't. But my partner went to St. Louis, and he went for the weekend. I think he had a wedding that he had to go to. And next weekend, actually, I have a friend that's it's got a, I don't know, I call it the compound up in Hayward, Wisconsin, and he's invited me out the weekend after 4th of July, but my other partner may go to the door, but he said he can give me the plane if I want to go there and stay. He says he can drive up there, and I said, I'll let you know. I said, because you know how I am. I never book the plane sometimes because I'm so last minute, and if I do book it, then I don't use it, and it's just, I'm terrible with it, and, you know, I just could never plan anything. I had this conversation with my cousins that I went out with them Friday night. We had some people in from Europe, and you know, a number of occasions we try to do things, and I just can't make it there. And but that's me. So I'm just so last minute. So I haven't been out there lately. Although my daughter wants to go out. I had bought her this really nice birthday gift about a month ago, even though her birthday was on the 23rd. But then I gave her a little something extra. But the deal is that she has to go for a ride in a twin, possibly the V-tail with you. My buddy's A36 and then the 22. I said, you got to help me with this thing. I said, because, you know, I got the disease. So I said, you know, take a look at all the cabins, see what you think. I said, that Bonanza, I said, it's the same as the twin, you know, and, same with the V-tail, like the F-33. I said, and tell me what you like, because if I get something she likes, then she'll come along with
it. There you go.
You know what I mean?
So, you know what's, funny is, your wife asked for a ride in the V-tail.
Right.
And the airplane, when I've been available, the airplane hasn't. It's gone every weekend for the rest of the summer.
No kidding.
So we're going to have to pick some weekday.
Yeah, we can do that during the weekday. Yeah. She likes, you know, what my wife likes about that, she likes the tail. You know, she likes the tail, and that's what she always liked about the Moonies. We went for a ride in that, but she said she felt a little claustrophobic, and we talked about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But she likes the way the V-tail looks. And so, we'll probably go for a ride in that. Like I said, she likes the retractable gear. And
so do I.
You know, kind of.
But usually I'm surprised. That's more of a testosterone thing.
Yeah, she says it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks very cool. I love that. And I love just flipping the switch. It could do nothing on the outside. As a matter of fact, in the Cirrus, as much as I love it,
right,
I think I'm going to add a gear prop switch, some extra switches just down there.
Yeah, they have that. I think.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, I think Purdue is actually using them.
Oh, for commercial training? Has the FAA allowed that?
Yeah.
There you go.
It obviously doesn't do anything, but.
Mark doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah, that way the insurance likes me. But I feel like, yeah, gear up, yeah, prop back. Few switches on my pre-oiler before I start.
Maybe my wife would think that gear went up.
Yeah, just tell her it did. She'll never know.
Yeah,
especially if it makes a noise.
Yeah,
funk.
Well, that's what you do. You go,
yeah.
Something like that.
Maybe jiggle the controls a little bit.
Yeah, push it forward.
Yeah,
a little bit. You never know. Yeah, so that's so that was the deal I made with my daughter, and it was kind of funny. So she opened up the trunk, and I had that. I had bought her a new computer, so she wanted that Apple, the AirBook.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So I got her that, and then I had that piece of paper kind of connected to it. And then she was just like, she just shakes her head. I'm like, hey, you already got a gift. I said, this is the deal if you want this one. And, so of course.
Teaching her a good negotiation.
Yeah, because I have to do it that way, because, you know, with other things that I had purchased for her and this and that, and like when she gets together, she always puts these long, drawn out contracts together. You know, and I mean, she just turned 16, but she writes these 5 and 6 and 7 page
uh-oh.
Deals.
We've got a lawyer coming.
Yeah, and I tell you, she makes me crazy. I said, I can't sign that stuff anymore. I said, because there's something in there. I said, that you're going to screw me anyway. I said, so even when I wrote this thing about going for rides in these aircraft, there was one line in there that didn't look right. And what I mean by that is you might have interpreted it a different way. So I actually had to strike it from there and you know, reprint the different copy up because I can, she would have said, well, because of this, I don't have to do that.
Do you ever watch the TV show?
She's 16. I'm scared to death of what I write to her.
Exactly. But what's the TV show? Oh my goodness. It's with the scientists. I can't see, talk about forgetfulness. It's a big hit show.
What network?
The 30-minute sitcom.
Is it on now?
Big Bang Theory?
I have no clue.
Big Bang Theory. Where the guys got roommate contracts.
Yep. Yep,
that's
Sheldon
what it reminds.
And Leonard.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, you can, that breaks the contract.
One of my favorite shows, actually.
Actually, it's a great show. Have
never
you watched
watched
it?
Never
no,
watched
really?
It. I only watch Criminal Minds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this one, it's kind of corny, but I think some of the things you'd like.
Yeah, I probably would. I mean, I only watch Criminal Minds. My wife, as you know, she only watches Turner Classic Movies and listens to 40s on 4, which is what she likes in the series because of the XM. And my partner, once he had shut it off, he's like, what do you think? I'm like, no, turn it back on. I said, she loves it.
Yeah, so. I'm a 70s on 7 guy.
Yeah, well,
every now and then 80s on 8.
Yeah, I'll do 80s, 90s, and then some other stuff, you know, but I kind of like everything.
Oh, top 20 on 2, that's me. Or alternative.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what I've discovered is a lot of the younger folk, excuse me, I'm going to cough. I'm getting over a little throat here. They like music that I like. And it, for a while there, when I was a little bit younger, I just didn't, we had that generational gap. But, like, my son now loves stuff from the 70s, Sticks and Kelson Sticks, Led Zeppelin, stuff like that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, my daughter likes stuff from the 80s. I mean, I was just like, you know, she's playing this stuff on in the car off the iPod. I'm like, huh. And I turned to my wife. I said, remember this song? And she's like, oh, yeah, where'd you? I said, it's not mine. It's hers. You know, and so she's playing all this stuff from the 80s.
How cool is that?
Kind of, but she likes everything, and like I said, she plays these musical instruments and stuff, so I mean, it's just...
and a lawyer. That's pretty talented and diverse daughter you have there.
Yeah, I guess. You know, so, well, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we will. We will. So, I want to ask you a question, Alex, and actually, Josh, we could probably bring you in early on this as well. As we think about age and things, and one of the things that I really want to talk about is youth in aviation, not euthanasia, but youth in aviation, and the generational gap. But this age thing kind of got me thinking, and I came up with this question that I wanted to kind of raise in the beginning. Do pre-flights have an expiration date? Because I know at some point, if I'm going to fly at 7 in the morning, I'll come out to the airport the night before, and I'll do a complete pre-flight. And then I find myself out of guilt or maybe out of common sense or doing the right thing, I end up doing it again in the morning. And I was thinking of the things that, I hate to make myself sound so old, that almost makes today's youth a little bit different. It's kind of a little impatience I see, and they, okay, let's just get through this so we can get to the fun thing. And I apologize if that's incorrectly, you know, putting a whole group based on the things of a couple.
I think that's spot on, actually. I really do. So
that The impatience like, let's get to the end result quicker.
I want this now. I need to see it now.
So that, get back to the original question. We'll expand that as we go through the evening. But as I think about the, do I need to redo the pre-flight the next morning after I've done it the night before? A very thorough one. Loaded the bags, checked the fuel, sumped the tanks, checked the oil, checked for every nick, checked for everything. Now it's 12 hours later, because I went home and got a good night's sleep.
Well, you know,
do I have the pre-flight?
Well, I think you still end up looking at the plane. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I'm guilty of coming out. I shouldn't call it guilty, but I mean, I have been out here before at night just because I was just cruising around and decided to come here, and I am flying in the morning, and I am going out with my wife, and I take a quick peek at it and just kind of go over it, and then I'm the first guy in the morning that's going. You know, out of my partner, you know, I have it for the day, and you know, I still look it over, and but what I noticed with a friend of mine with his Bonanza, his hangar up in Kenosha, he'll pull the plane out, and I mean, he'll look it over, but nothing real intense. But it was just like, well, I was the last one to fly it. I mean, it's his own personal hangar; he parks it in there himself, as opposed to like us, where we have a handful of club members where we all park it in the, I don't know if it's called community hangar, if that's what you call it, and you know, it's there, and, you know, you came out the night before, but I just think just because it is a community hangar and there are people walking around, you don't know what happened in the 12 hours that you were there from the time the night before, especially in the event where, Let's say I stopped at an airport for avgas, and then I landed, and I sumped the tanks before I left, and I parked the plane, and I come back the next morning to go flying because I have the plane again. Do I sump the tanks or don't I sump the tanks? I mean, I just did it before I got here. I mean, the night before, I was the last one to fly it. But you know, it's just me thinking like a weirdo, you know, who was in the hangar. I mean,
yep.
Sabotage. I mean, not, that's never happened. I never even heard of a story of anything.
Well,
it's like
never
that.
Happened. It's like the farmer that went out and found his dead horse and said, that's funny, he never did that before.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I think I would probably be a little bit more laxed if I was in a hangar by myself. Yeah, but then again, I have two partners, so if they were flying it prior to me, well, then maybe that's a different story. But if it was a Friday night and I flew it, parked it, came back Saturday morning, I'm probably not going to – I don't know if I'm going to be as vigilant as I was, let's say, if I wasn't the last person to fly.
Now, what if you're just going to lunch? You go to the local airport, you fly for an hour or two or whatever, you have lunch, you come out to the airplane. How much of the pre-flight do you do over again?
You know, I do a walk around. I kind of just take a real quick peek. I mean, it's fast. It's not a 10 or 15 minute ordeal, to be quite honest with you. I think the other thing is the run up. I mean, how many times should you run your plane up?
Well, that was my next question. So now you get in the airplane, you just had lunch. Do you do mag check? Do you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always ask everybody that. I ask the same thing. I mean, sometimes with my partner or somebody, and we fly somewhere, and we get gas, and we switch, and then I take off. I don't do a mag check. I mean, I don't run it back up to 1,700 RPMs and have that motor going, you know, and then check. I just don't. I mean, I don't know if I'm, and, you know, with the autopilot, too, I said, yeah, I mean, I'll check it, and I'll do a real quick check, but that thing's never went out on me. Not saying it can't.
Right.
You know, but I mean, I spoke to a lot of people that have been, you know, they have thousands of hours, and I always ask them the question, you know, you left that morning and you did your mag check. I mean, do you really do it again? And, you know, the answer is pretty common. It's like, no.
Right. No, I think it is, because one of the things I've read is it could go out on you, a mag, at any point. Just because it didn't on the run up doesn't mean when you get in the air you don't have a bad mag all of a sudden.
Right.
Right, so it there many people that would support. No need to do
now,
that second mag check.
I mean, you're the Josh. You're the yeah. one that goes to school. I mean, I don't know what they teach you there, but I mean, is that? I mean, I don't know if that's the norm or if it's not the norm, or am I wrong in not checking it every single time I get in there? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I that's just me.
Whenever we turn off the engine and restart it, that's. I mean, usually we'll do a an engine run up. Now, I mean, if we stop somewhere for lunch, we're not going to do a full walk around. We're going to take a look at it.
Right.
Nothing's dripping from, you know, the engine or the fuel tank. You have two wings. All three blades are on there. Three landing gear. Just kind of quick over. So.
Yeah, it's like what I do. Just kind of give it a once over.
And if it's VFR, I won't check the autopilot a second time.
Yeah.
You know, after the first one of the day, because I'm probably going to hand fly anyway.
Right.
If it's IFR, I'll do the quick everything check. So that's I guess, one way to look at it. It's kind of the conditions around you. But, you know, the other thing is this idea of, you know, I relate it back to when we were growing up and we got our license to drive, you were going on a trip. You checked the inflation level of your tires. You had to open up the hood and check your oil level. No one does that anymore.
Never done that.
Right? I don't either. And that's what made me say at the beginning, maybe the world has changed. I shouldn't say youth has changed. The world has changed, whether it's more impatient or just that everything works so well. Our engines are so sound in the cars, and the tires are visually, I mean, it, actually inside the car, it tells you what your tire pressure is in some of these cars. So, you know, I think that world has changed, and I've often wondered if the amount of work you do on the ground to make sure the plane is safe isn't steering some of the youth away from aviation. And actually, Josh, that kind of is a good lead into what we want to talk about tonight. You're obviously involved, and we'll give a little background in a second, but in terms of the amount of work before you can get in the air, is that keeping people out of aviation?
You know, I really don't think so. I think if they have an interest in aviation, they're going to go through that work just like they're going to push through ground school to get that license.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it takes you 3 hours to go fly a 15-minute airplane or airline or airplane flight, for that matter, I think that would happen. But 20, 30 minutes, not a problem.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Because I've heard the opposite, but I've heard it from people my age that are making a hypothesis that's driving it. So, yeah, we look now, and as I look at communities of pilots, it seems like they're either over 40 and maybe even over 50, generally speaking, or maybe in their 20s. It's that 30 to 45 or 30 to 50 seems like there's a big gap there. And there's not many even at the younger folks. So like I say, you're 21. So let's kind of get into that tonight. And let's give a little background about, where you are in your aviation career, and we'll then take it from there.
Sure. Well, I started taking flight lessons when I was, I think, 14 or maybe a freshman in high school with the Aviation Explorers. I did that maybe once every 3 months, and then I really, dove right into it in college, and that's what my degree is, majoring in aviation flight science, and got my private in a little, I think, 8 months, and then the instrument, and finally worked on the commercial multi and single, and as of last week, a commercial seaplane as well.
Oh, no kidding. Congratulations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's pretty exciting. So you're aviation science?
Or aviation flight science, yeah.
So what does that do for you?
That basically is a four-year degree in flying an airplane. I go to school at Western Michigan University, and we have three different degrees, aviation flight science. That's one that I'm doing, of course, aviation science administration and aviation maintenance technology. Maintenance technology is the degree in fixing the airplane, fixing what us pilots break. Science administration, that's the ones with the money who are doing the behind-the-scenes work, maybe working in a corporate flight department or scheduling at an airline, those kind of jobs.
That sounds so weird that's where the money is, to do kind of the paperwork.
Yeah.
And the person that has all the lives at stake is not where the money's at.
unfortunately, that's very true.
Well, at least in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, once that you're 60 and you're flying three times a month to China and back, you're making ungodly amounts.
I think I know who you're talking about.
No comment.
The question that I have is, when you talk about that, you watch this movie, Leonardo DiCaprio, when he plays Catch Me If You Can, and he plays this Pan Am guy, and and everybody used to look at pilots, and even when I was a kid, when I used to fly the Greece back and forth and these family vacations, and it was just like the neatest thing to do, and you always looked up to the pilot, and then and I know what's happened over the course of years. People, aviation came about. People used to wear suits like you used to see on these old shows. They don't anymore, and it's just kind of like riding a bus today, or the CTA, or VL, or whatever the case may be. And and I think what's happened is, I look at the commercial pilot that's flying that jet, and I say, wow, they're grossly underpaid today compared to what they used to get paid for years ago. And I mean, because obviously you're getting in that business.
Yep.
What's the deal for that? What's the deal with that? I mean, is it because, everybody's always looking for the cheapest flight out there, and what's the cheapest way to get to Florida, and Spirit Air will get you there for $99. It's not a $300 ticket, or you try to get a special, or people using their miles. And what is the deal for that big retrograde back in salaries now compared to what they were 30 years ago?
I think it's the rise of the regionals, because they're on a really tight budget. It's also the rise of the people that want to fly for very cheap and don't want to pay the $300 or $400 if they can pay $200. But also, I think it's the pilots' love for aviation. Me, like a lot of my students, we've always wanted to do this. So a company could exploit that, saying, hey, we're going to pay you maybe not very much, but you're going to be flying an airplane and you're going to absolutely love it, versus maybe a tax attorney. People don't wake up when they're little kids saying that I want to be a tax attorney.
But their parents do.
Exactly.
Well, okay, I can see that. But, at some point, you're 21 years old.
Yep.
Are you dating anybody?
I'm not.
Okay, so you're not dating anybody, so you don't have a girlfriend, you're not serious, you're not planning on getting married 3 years from now. But I'm wondering, when that does happen, you know, how that all changes now. You know, I mean, you want to start a family, you know, you want to have a house, whatever the case may be. I mean, what happens at that point? I just don't know. I just don't know where the future, you know, what kind, I just don't know how big the future is for somebody that's starting today, in that field. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Jess.
You don't for maybe 10 years when you're in the regionals. Maybe when you get up to captain, you'll have a better schedule or a better salary. But when you're a reserve on first officer and you're living in a crew house, I mean, there's just no way.
Yeah, so it's almost like someone that goes to college 4 years, then goes to medical school for 4 years,
right,
then does
right.
his internship for 2 years, and then does their fellowship. I mean, they just keep going and going and going before they really get to somewhere they want to be.
That's a good way to look at it, that the regionals is part of your education, I think, is what you just said.
So you're like a doctor.
Yeah,
I guess so. I equate it to the major leagues of baseball. I mean, United Airlines is the Cubs, but maybe Pinnacle is the Iowa Cubs or whatever their AA equivalent is. I don't keep up on that too much.
By the way, I don't think United would like to be the Cubs. Okay, the perennial losers.
Yeah.
Losers.
Well, I have a friend of mine that was emailing me tonight and some other stuff here, but he's a big fan of Southwest. And is United the guys that are always late when he says they're always late? He sends me pictures from the airport, like delayed.
Yeah, they've been, in the news perspective, they've been on the bottom end of customer sat ratings and their overall rating, which has tardiness as part of it.
Okay, so I have the right picture in my mind than what he was sending me. But he was just showing me all the different things about the difference between, let's say, a company like Southwest and United about how they run their businesses. And I know all these guys are in the futures market as, you know, for hedging themselves and you know, for fuel and whatever the case may be. And you know, I remember reading some articles how Southwest Airlines did a really good job of in the options market, forward thinking about where fuel prices were going to be, and they got their fuel. You know, if you want to look at a number, say for like $55 a barrel of oil, and it was trading like 110 or 120, so they were able to do that and pass the savings on, and you know, have cheaper tickets than the other people,
right?
And that sort of stuff. And then you know, you hear all this stuff about United, about how all these guys calling sick at the same time, and that sort of thing. And I'm just, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't understand that, because what happens is, I mean, I can only imagine what the cost is if somebody says something's wrong with the plane, and then they have to take everybody off the flight, put them up in hotels. It almost seems to me that, you know, when these guys do that, when they play those games, it's like they're almost shooting themselves in the foot. They don't get what they want, but we just spent $200,000. Because we just had to move everything around and put people up. And I mean, that takes.
And that just doesn't happen once, right?
No, it doesn't happen once. This is just me thinking out loud. I mean, I don't know. And then, you know, you take away from the bottom line, you know, you start doing that every couple of weeks. I mean, it's just like, you know, how do these guys expect to get what they want? I mean, because it's like, it's weird. It's like play ball our way or you don't play ball at all. And, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, like I said, I'm just looking from the outside through the glass on how I see things and what I read out there.
Right.
And, it's just kind of crazy.
But how does that relate, or maybe you're saying it does, does that make people like Josh's peers, obviously Josh not being one of them, to stay away from aviation? Because
I don't know about staying away from aviation. I think he's got a big decision to make. Like if he's got, you know, if there are three airlines that are after him that want to hire him, you know, which route do you take? You know, when you hear these crazy stories that these guys do, it's just like, wow. I'm just like he says, he's 21, he's young, you know, maybe he won't get paid the best right out of the box, but he's going to be doing something that he loves. And then all of a sudden you got some guy that's been flying for 15 years next year and gives you the wink, says, you know, you got to call him sick tomorrow, right? what do you do? You know, so it's
I didn't get the email, which reminds me of my joke last week, but I digress.
Okay. And then the other thing is that I wonder is, you know, how is the commercial side of that, you know, flying passengers around versus, let's say, if you were working for somebody, like UPS or FedEx or something like that. I mean, what's the deal there? Because I don't know.
Well, UPS, I know, and FedEx, they haven't hired in I don't know how long, just because they pay their pilots a lot. And it's really an end career. Just like United, they haven't hired too many pilots or the last couple years. It's the regionals. But, however, this new 65-year-old retirement age, that's going to really affect these major airlines, including FedEx and UPS.
Now, when you say end career, does that mean like you end up, you go there and like you just never leave?
Pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. That's the pinnacle. Yep. Not Pinnacle Airlines, yeah. But the right. Pinnacle of a thing. And, you know, I talked to some of these pilots flying for NetJets. They love
right.
it.
Yeah.
It's like I'm 2 weeks off a week, and then every other month get another week, and they're flying, you know, top echelon passengers.
Really sweet airplanes, too.
Really sweet airplanes. I mean, it's just to the person that wants to do that, that's where you aim, and sometimes that's after the airlines. Many times, I imagine, after the regionals.
Is NetJets, like, I'm assuming they pay more than the regionals? Am I right in saying that, or is that
very much? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Big time, yeah.
All right.
So let's take a step back. So, Josh, you know, I keep wondering, and I think back, and that was a long time ago. You know, I grew up in the late 50s and 60s. And when we got to be 16, we just had to have a hot car, right? A GTO 400 four barrel, and we drove fast. Now, kids are happy with the little neon and all that. Oh, this is a cool soul. So, I'm wondering, is there a change where aviation, forget about the money, forget aspect and all that, just in terms of the cool factor, is it not on the radar screen because cars aren't on it and then other things like internet and other things are on your radar screen more?
You know, I think it still is on the radar screen, and also I think kids still love cars.
Oh,
my
really?
Friends specifically, a lot of them are from Michigan and okay. Detroit, so yeah, obviously yeah. That's a big car city. But also video games and computers, that I think really took a lot of the interest from machinery and cars away.
So when did you get started? You said early.
Yeah. You know, I caught the bug when I was 6 months old. My first flight was a United...
6 months?
6 months, yeah.
You remember like it was yesterday.
6 months flying on United from O'Hare to Pittsburgh, and I, you know, looked back ever since. I've always loved to fly. When I was a little kid, I always tell the story. I wanted to be a pilot, or I wanted to be a train engineer, or the color yellow.
Did you say the color yellow?
Yep.
Okay.
And I couldn't do that, but my car is now yellow. So
that's funny because I just bought a box of Crayola, and where it says yellow, underneath in parentheses, it says Josh Blaine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Really?
So now you have the bug. Where was the outlet? You couldn't sign up for hockey, you know, like they have hockey and basketball.
Right,
so
right.
6 years old, you can't. What do you do? How do you satisfy that itch? Scratch that itch. That's what I want to say.
Well, my family always would travel because our extended family would either be in Pittsburgh or Las Vegas or maybe somewhere down in Florida. And my dad would travel for business, so he would always rack up miles. So we would always be traveling on United, which is, you know, why I always bring them up, because that's probably my favorite airline. But we would always be traveling, and I would equate that traveling, that smell of jet fuel, to, you know, grandma's house or cousins or the beach. Also on the flight, specifically United, had the Channel 9, where you could listen to
air traffic
control.
That, yeah.
Yeah. My dad, who's in radio, is also interested in aviation, so he really appreciated that. I really enjoyed it. We would always listen in and give us a thumbs up when you heard our call sign. My mom would sometimes be like, Josh, there's a the pilot asked me a very important thing. He needs you to listen in, and gives us a thumbs up. And, you know, I would sit there quiet for the entire 3 hour flight listening in. And, you know, my mom got a chance to sleep. little did she know that put me down a course that would cost, you know, $50,000 to
lots of money. That's what I thought. The return on investment will be significant.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, you mentioned Aviation Explorers. I know you probably did the Young Eagles things. How did you hear about those things? And well, tell us a little about your experience, again, getting going before you had your license.
You know, I do remember actually hearing about Aviation Explorers. It was October of my freshman year of high school, and I'm in homeroom, and my homeroom teacher, I think Mr. Kusab, he was the shop teacher. He announced to the class, is anyone interested in aviation? And, of course, you know, I'm the only one. And, in fact, I was the only one out of the school of 2,000 students who was interested in aviation.
Wow.
He announced that if anyone's interested in aviation, there's a thing here for an aviation explorer thing. That's basically what he said. He didn't really read too much into it. And I went up to him after, and I wanted to look more into it. And they were having an open house. And actually, they had the open house in this room that we're in right now.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yep. And went to that, and I fell in love. $35, I could get a month. I could get exposed to aviation, going cool trips. I was sold.
That is so cool, because we didn't have that. You know, I knew I loved aviation,
right?
But I didn't know about general aviation. I just knew I loved flying airplanes.
I like the price, $35 a month.
Yeah. Well, we would also wash airplanes for the flight time as well.
Yeah. See, I used to do that even in college.
Well, that was with Windy City Flyers, and we would wash them every Columbus Day, and that was the only time that they were washed. So those things were pretty dirty.
Oh, man. That's... So the whole year they go by, and then you guys wash the outside.
Oh yeah, so we definitely earned our keep with that.
And then what was the return? Was it free flights or?
Yeah, we would have a flight every quarter.
Okay,
and that was a lot of fun. We would be sitting up front, and there would be an instructor there, and we got to go flying. I still remember my first flight. It was me, my dad, the instructor, and another kid who was in the Explorers, took off out of Executive here, 172, went over our house, circled over the house, then circled over Northwestern University, went up the lakeshore to Waukegan, and then we swapped out, and I still have the picture of that. That was my very first Facebook picture.
Okay. And then how big is that group that that used to go there, the Clean Plains and that sort of thing?
When I started, I think it was maybe three or four students, maybe five. Like Mark said, as I get older, I get forgetful.
As he gets older.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, it's 21, right? I'm three times your age.
And I think I'm
I guess that makes me feel better. I don't know.
I think I'm walking out.
You guys just finished on your own.
Yep. And then we grew, so maybe I think we had 10 students at the most, but for being a Chicagoland area with, you know, 8 million people, I was very surprised that there's only maybe 10, 12 high schoolers in it.
I was trying to read a little bit about Aviation Explorers. If I read it right, and I might have read it wrong, there's only like 10 posts, as they call them, around the country. Is that correct?
I think there's a little bit more, because up at Oshkosh, we go up there for volunteering, and we're going to be going up there this year again. There's, I think, maybe 20 posts there. You know, I really don't know the number, but I think there's a little bit more than 10.
So you just said we. Are you still part of Aviation Explorers?
Technically, I am, yeah. Up until
Isn't there like an age limit?
Yeah, 21.
Oh, okay.
But I registered last year as a 20-year-old, so I'm still technically in the Explorers for this year.
And you see, you pay your $35 a month, and yet you're over in Western Michigan.
Yeah, so. For non-flying members, it's only $35 for the year.
Ah.
So, I was wrong.
So what do you do? Again, you're another state away or a couple states away, depending on how you
Different
think about it.
Different time zone away, too.
What value do you get out of staying involved with Aviation Explorers?
Really, at this point, more giving back. When I become a flight instructor, I'm probably going to come back and provide flight instructing for them, as well as at our meetings, we would have different ground school topics and probably teach those, but also so that I can go volunteer at Oshkosh. That's the main draw.
And what do you guys do, like ground?
Yeah, well, the older ones get to marshal the airplanes as well as go by the taxiways and the runways and plane count for the FAA. So I'm actually there at the MUCAO with my binoculars, marking off the tail numbers, what type of airplane they are, if that's an arrival or departure. It's
pretty sweet,
yeah.
Wow.
You're busy.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about plane spotting.
Yeah. This is going to be at Oshkosh.
At Oshkosh,
yeah. He does it every year.
Yes.
That's very cool. So there you have that. Did you also do Young Eagles?
I did. I did Young Eagles maybe once or twice, and then I actually volunteered with the Explorers during it. So I would walk the kids out to the airplane, make sure the parents and the kids weren't running off into the props. And
always a good thing.
Yeah, always a good thing, yeah. And then probably at the end of it, I would get a flight as well, too.
So that's interesting. So how do... I guess I'm trying to ask, how do people get their kids involved or how do kids get involved in Aviation Explorers? Is it part of the Boy Scouts? Is that what it is?
It is a division of the Boy Scouts. It's called, I can't remember the name of it.
All right, well.
And once that the show is going to be done, I'm gonna remember it.
Don't worry about it. We'll get it by the end of the show.
It's getting older.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
It's a division.
Where's my toast?
Yeah. It's a division just like the Boy Scouts or the Venture Scouts, actually.
But you say Boy Scouts, but I know that there's young women. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
the, it as well.
Yes, and I think it's 14 to 21, and there's not just aviation explorers. There's also police explorers and firefighter explorers. That's probably the more common ones.
Interesting. You know, Alex, I've tried upon occasion to get our local high schools with aviation clubs, and there doesn't seem to be interest. Yeah, your high school, one guy said, was it high school or was it junior high that your one teacher said, anyone interested in aviation?
That was my high school.
Well, that was your high school.
With my homeroom teacher. Now, a lot of homeroom teachers didn't read the announcements, so if I had a different one, I may have not have joined the Explorer Post, and I may have not actually, you know, continued in the aviation career. But in my high school, there was maybe one other kid that I'm still friends with who was interested in aviation, and that was it. And we had an aviation club. It was me, him, and the band teacher, who was also a pilot.
Wow. And can I ask what high school?
Yeah, Niles North in Skokie, Illinois.
Because New Trier,
yeah,
a very large and famous set of schools, if you will, they have an aviation club.
Okay.
And I've tried, that's what I wanted to start in my local community, also on the north side of Chicago. And again, there just doesn't seem to be any interest from the teachers, and I'm willing to sponsor it. You know, I'll get it going. I'll come in on evenings. Like, we don't think that people are interested. I just am appalled at that response.
You know, it's kind of a common theme almost, because you were out here on the ramp one day and you were telling me about all these scholarships that were available, and like nobody applies to them.
Right. It's so funny you brought it up, because before you got here tonight, Josh's parents had stopped by and was talking about it, that here at Signature Flight Support, one of the people that manages the customer service reps, was involved in organizations that had significant scholarships. I'm talking like ATP ratings for $35,000 and mechanic ratings for $15,000 or whatever it was. And she said there's no one applying for these scholarships, and they're going out to the schools to ask, hey, apply for it, tell you about it. And she said on some you get two or three scholarship applications, maybe one. And this is like major dollars for something that some kids are just...
Right. I'm going to hang up my headphones and walk out and, you know, go apply for these right now, because after I heard that, I was pretty shocked.
Yeah, and this was months ago, so I suspect that at least last year's deadline has come and gone, but this year is another year.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, no, absolutely.
But getting back to high schools, there are some local high schools here that do teach aviation. I know one of my really good friends from school, his name is Craig, he actually took a couple aviation classes through Embry-Riddle at his high school in... Lyons Township. So that's pretty nice. I wish I had that. Yeah.
So the Embry-Riddle, obviously a famous organization.
Right. I think they have
Chicago-based classes in the high school?
Yeah, I don't really know the details too much about it, and I'm sure if Craig is listening right now, he's just screaming into his computer telling me the details. But
just tweet Josh, and he'll pick it up while he's sitting here.
I'm pretty sure that... there is a alumni of Embry-Riddle who is teaching there, and then he kind of took some of those classes
under his
wing.
That's some of that stuff the give back, if you will.
Right.
And that's what I want to do. Yeah, turn on your phone. He's calling you, I'm sure, or something like that. Or tweet you or instant message you, text you, whatever they call it.
Snail mail me.
Snail mail. That was another joke I told. That was funny, too.
Was it?
Yeah, legend in my own mind. So, you know, we talk a lot about the community of aviation. So you started with some of these, your peers in high school with aviation explorers. Have you kept in touch? Have they stuck with it?
You know, I have. The president, who was before me, she didn't do aviation, but the president after me is actually at North Dakota University studying aviation.
I take it you were the president then, by your...
Oh, yeah, sorry, I was president for 2 years.
So a little bit leadership stuff to go on the resume.
Years.
That's
pretty
exciting.
Yeah. Still on my resume now. we have a couple members who went to North Dakota. A couple members went to Embry-Riddle, and a few of them are actually coming to Western with me.
That's exciting. Yeah, Western Michigan's got a great rep, and for that, as does obviously Dakota and Embry and some of the other ones. How are things at Western? I know you're going to be a senior there. Has it been what you expected, better or worse, surprises?
Oh, it's far exceeded my expectations. I really enjoyed the program. I really do. I just finished up. Like I said, I got my seaplane last week, so I finished up flying with them. Really great airplanes. I really enjoyed it. Train and Cirrus SR-20 is private and instrument. I mean, you can't really beat that. Maybe a 22, but yeah, for solo in a SR-22, that's quite impressive. But we train in SR-20s. Also commercial single engine training in that. Piper Seminoles, Piper Arrows. Last year we got a Boeing 727 donated by FedEx. Last month we got a...
I'm signing up. I'm looking at Alex.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Who pays for the gas on that?
Right.
You know, I don't know, but it still taxis around. The dean will taxi around with the maintenance students.
I'd like to even do that. I would love to taxi a 727 in a ground... Yeah. Stuff in the logbook.
Our dean is actually typewriting the 727, so that's pretty cool. It was really cool to actually see taxi around, mainly because it sat there for maybe a year, and then they finally built the curriculum to start that, and they decided to taxi it around on the busiest day in the airport's history. And they stopped in the center of a taxiway to swap out the students. We actually had a ground stop, so people weren't allowed into the airspace. People weren't allowed to take off about October of last year.
In Chicago, I understand they debuted a new service of you rented a bike and you could pick it up in one location.
Right, right.
And return it to any other location. The first day, we happened to be the same day as the Blackhawks parade when you had over 2 million people, and everyone complained on the first day, hey, I couldn't return the bike. When you returned it to another place, it was only in space available, and everyone dropped it off at the one place, so they had to ride the bike back to where they started from and then take other transportation to get to where they were going. Right. So timing is everything. Usually when they have 727s, I didn't think that those ever flew. I thought that was more for the avionics and the maintenance guys.
Right. It doesn't fly. I mean, of course, it legally won't fly anymore just because of too much of a liability for FedEx and the university and the upkeep and the fuel. But we use it as a trainer for the maintenance students. We actually used to have, from 2000 2004, we were one of the only universities that had a Boeing 747.
Wow.
Northwest Airlines parked it right on a ramp. However, they took out 3 out of the 4 engines and pretty much gutted the entire system. So it just sat there versus this 727. They still have all the systems intact. You can start it up. You can open up the cargo door, and you can start the APU. In fact, you go in the cockpit, and they still have the frequencies for the airport for when they flew it in 2011.
I'd like to rent it out and have a party inside there.
You know what? That's what I've been saying. They were trying to figure out what to do with the inside because it's a cargo airplane. There's really nothing inside. I want to turn it into a bowling alley.
But I like either a bar or...
I got an absolute fabulous idea.
All right.
I can't share it on the air, though.
In other words, you just did.
I may draw a picture though. For
you know, that would really improve in enrollment and recruitment.
Yeah, absolutely. He's drawing me a picture. Oh my goodness, it's so fun to have him here.
I think I already know what he's drawing.
I do too. We both do. I just want to see what kind of artist he is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to show you the pieces. I can't draw the other things. If you can get the idea.
All right, this is radio. This isn't visual. We can't go with the TV thing.
Not a problem.
Yeah, we should go out and do a Google Hangout on it. So, Josh, you know, how do we get other people involved? I mean, are you the anomaly, or you happen to be in a room where one person happened to read an announcement? What's that gap? How do we reach out to those that were in that class that never heard that announcement?
You know, I deal with this quite a lot. I work for my recruitment and outreach department at the university. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly going to different schools and having summer camps and having, you know, preschoolers or kindergartens students come in, or maybe elementary or junior high students come in and look at the airplanes, or we go out to them and outreach to them. And that's really what we've come across as well. It is pretty difficult to get kids interested in aviation. Yes, they like airplanes, but not a lot of them may want a career in it.
Or they don't
really
know.
Yeah.
Right? Like you say, it's either that or be the color yellow.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, some of the pushback, and I don't think this is your case, that I've seen is parents. I've talked to parents about, did you get an answer from Craig?
I did, but also I just got a text from my mom saying that she's listening right as you mentioned the parents.
Oh, okay. Timing is everything again. I know your parents have been supportive of you, but so many times when I talk to even my people my age or a little bit younger and talk about their kids, oh no, that's too dangerous. Do you ever hear that?
You know, I did. My mom is a Jewish mother, and
I got one of those too.
Yeah.
Mrs. Blaine.
So she still gets that little apprehension whenever I fly or nervousness. I have taken her up once or twice, and she does love that. But she still says that, you know, isn't that dangerous or aren't you scared? But she still lets me follow my dreams, which is really nice. And,
yeah,
of course,
absolutely.
My dad, he's pretty interested in aviation. I flew with him today, so he's always really pushed me for that as well.
You know, I got this thing here, and I'm going to pull it up from wrong passcode. Rod Machado, are you familiar with him?
Yeah, I've heard the name, yeah.
So he's aviation humorist, CFI.
You know what? Writes. I think he follows me on Twitter, and I follow him as well.
Yeah. You know, a really good guy, well-known in the aviation industry. And I'm going to pull up something that I went to his site. And as you can see, I'm showing you from his rodmachado.com, Reluctant Moms and Dads.
Oh, yeah? Oh, he does the sporty stuff, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Well, when you say does sporty stuff.
The videos.
Actually, I think that's Rob. I can't a different. That's Rob, not Rod.
Oh, or maybe you know what? He may be the guy from Flight Simulator. You know, I'm getting all these things mixed up.
Well, let me read an article.
Okay,
Or part of one. He says, "Suppose this is a note to moms and dads. Suppose I told you I could get your child to enthusiastically study geography, math, physics, chemistry, and psychology." After you had my head examined, would you be interested? Oh, and as a bonus, I can get him or her to hang out with highly motivated, well-educated, older people who are good role models because they don't do drugs, graffiti, or tattoos, and they have a great work ethic. You're still with me, aren't you? Then let's talk about the value of allowing a responsible teenager to take flying lessons. And it goes on and on about the benefits of taking lessons, including things like self-respect and,
right,
and pride
right.
and all of that. So, you know, I recommend whenever parents tell me, oh, no, I would never want my child to do that because it's dangerous, read this. And, yeah, there's risk. And anytime you get a human body moving faster than the speed of walking, there's additional risk. But it's Alex is looking.
I'm making up names for the great idea that I have.
Oh, okay. If you could only see, I looked over to Alex, and all of a sudden he had that look where his...
These are two names I have so far. Is that good or what?
Come on.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Everyone's going
to Sorry, wanna. Folks, I can't share it, but come to the club, and I'll share it with you.
There you go. Come to Signature Flight Support at Pelwaukee. I always want to say Pelwaukee. It still comes in. So anyway, how much we digress. So to me, that was always the cool thing that, you know, I think generally pilots are good role models for youth and can get kids like yourself. I hate to call you a kid anymore. You're now 21, but off on a better foot.
Right, right. You know, I didn't realize that either until probably just now. I mean, we don't do drugs and try not to drink and fly.
No, we don't drink and fly. We just try not to drink too much.
That
other
too,
times.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is correct that pilots are pretty good role models for the most part. Now, of course, each community has their own bad eggs. So.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the idea of, too, the studying, you know, I don't like book studying, but I...
Neither do I.
Right, but yet we have to do it, and
right.
we do come out smarter around geography, math, physics, science, all of
hey,
that.
Hey, you're talking
of
to the Geography B champion in junior high.
Woohoo! Yeah, I still don't know where, like, half the cities in around the world are. I'm not very good
you know
at
where
that.
Where everything's around the world. You have Iran, and that's what you did after you Iraq'd your car. And then, you know, you go to that. That's how I remembered it back in high school.
Yeah, we have to have our own little way, don't we? That's funny. So, Alex, when did you get first involved in aviation? Was it at a young age or an old age?
Oh, I mean, I always liked it when I was a kid. I think you heard me tell the story before. You know, we'd always have a relative coming in from Europe, and, you know, we'd always go to... I was always at the airport at least once every 3 months, I think it was. And it was always cool to watch the planes take up.
O'Hare.
O'Hare. Yeah, you know, whether... Yeah. you know, you had somebody coming in from Greece or here or there, or whatever the case may be, or dropping somebody off, and they were going to Europe, and so it was kind of neat. And then if I got to go somewhere with the family, that was kind of fun, and not fun, it was fun. I shouldn't say kind of fun. So it was always neat to go through the airport. And then, like I said, I know you heard me tell this story, even when my wife and I were dating, and I always, you know, my trip that I would take, whether if I was riding on the motorcycle or in the car or something, would always be around the terminal at O'Hare.
Right.
And you've probably done it too, Josh. I mean, you're just an idiot. You're just driving around in this big circle, you know, and then sometimes, you know, if you can drive slow enough past the terminal as somebody's taking off, so you can watch that thing go. And, it's kind of funny because recently my daughter and I had to get off the exit somewhere, and I ended up being right by the fence where the plane comes over.
At O'Hare.
Yeah, at O'Hare. I forget where I was at, but it was maybe somewhere off Lee Street, and I was zigzagging somewhere, and that's where it was. So I was always kind of looking at that all the time. And then, you know, and my friend had one of those, you know, model airplanes that used to fly around, and I remember we went into Hanson Park Stadium. We snuck in there over on the northwest side, and he had his plane with him, and I think he probably flew it for about 15 seconds before he crashed it. And, you know, so that was the deal there. So, you know, I used to do all that, you know, buy little things that you would throw. You know, you've seen them in the mall. They have those big styrofoam planes.
Yeah.
Everybody's had one of those, you know. So I always loved that stuff. But, I mean, it just never, like I told you, you know, it's different for me. I got in, you know, I didn't start flying until, you know, up until, you know, a few years ago or so. But it's just kind of like, you know, I think you heard me say you get in a, you know, you become an adult. You know, you start to make a little money. You can afford to actually fly now and that sort of thing. And so that's really kind of how it worked out. I mean, it never even crossed my mind taking a path like what Josh did, because I didn't even know anything even existed like that.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so I mean, I had no clue. And as far as I was concerned, I mean, that didn't even look like it would even be part of the cards. And, you know, I just wouldn't even have thought of how to even go about it. You know, my parents didn't know anything about that. And, you know, everything to them is like so dangerous. And, you know, I was out with, like I said, some relatives last Friday. There was 8 of us that were together. We had some people that came in from Europe, and I have one particular cousin, you know, I said, oh, why don't we go up one day? And he goes, you know, I think I'll try it, but I think he's like kind of terrified of just flying in general. And like, he hates going anywhere in the commercial airlines. And I said, well, I said, if you hate that, you'll probably like this. I said, this is much safer. I said, because when the motors go out on that thing, it just comes straight down. I said, at least we can float down to a certain degree, or pull the chute.
Yeah, pull the chute, that's right.
And so, like I said, so getting back to your original question, I always was just kind of around it, in the sense of just like going to the airport and whatever the case may be. And, you know, everyone, you know, you're a kid, you know, you know, Top Gun, you know, I must have saw that 50 times. That and Scarface, I think, is kind of, I'm not sure which one I watched more, but it got so bad, my wife actually threw them out, but it's okay because they're all VHS tapes anyway. Nobody watches that anymore. So, should get them for the iPad though. But,
that's right.
Anyway, so, you know, so that's kind of how it was. And like I said, it just was, eventually with time, it was just like, okay, I can afford to do this. And, you know, I just started, you know, and everyone's heard the story about how it all started, you know, when
you went to a car show, a car airplane show.
Oh, yeah, the Jet and Porsche show here. And that's where I saw Rob Mark. And I said, if I'd ever own a plane, I said, I'd buy that Cirrus is what it was. And so that's how it happened. And, but a year prior to that, I think I remember telling you the story. I went to go to DuPage because I have amblyopia on one eye, so I didn't know if I can ever even get a medical. And then I found somebody online on some forum, that he had his, you know, he flew for like a NetJets or somebody like that privately, and you know, he had his medical and it wasn't an issue. And you know, you have to get your SOTA license, which is what I had to do over at the, at DuPage. But prior to meeting Rob Mark, who got me I did my private with him, the year prior to that, I went to DuPage and I found somebody there because with a sport plane. And I think I told you the story, and it was terrible. Like I said, it felt like I was on this chair that I'm sitting on with a propeller on the back and a parachute. And I was just like 200 feet off the ground. I was already swearing at myself inside saying, what are you doing up here? But I didn't know anything about dihedral. You know, it was nice puffy clouds. It was warm. I thought it was a beautiful day. It's really not a beautiful day. You know, right now it's nice to go. But, you know, and then I didn't get in a plane again, a general aviation aircraft, for a year. And then my wife was driving down Willow Road, and she says, "I can't believe you're not doing this. You know, you said you want, you know, we were going to go out."
You know, I love your wife.
I everybody does. Yeah, I'm lucky to that. I'm lucky that in that sense, and because she's on board with it, and like she says, "Well, if you can't beat him, join him," you know, and that sort of thing. It's just my daughter; she's kind of on the fence here and there.
She'll get there.
So yeah, and that's how it kind of was with me. So again, it was really I liked it when I was a kid, but never thought it was ever something that I would do, and then it just kind of got reintroduced at a later date by saying, "Wow, people actually fly little planes," and I never even thought
about it. You know, it's funny you talk about going to O'Hare and timing your car ride or motorcycle ride so the airplane goes right over top.
Right.
I do that, and I see a bazillion people do it right here on the north end here on Hints Road.
Right.
As people come in for 1-6, and you're driving, all of a sudden you see them slow way down, or if I'm in the car, if there's no one behind me, if there's someone behind me, I'll keep going. Just so I can time it. So I can
I've almost gotten to an accident on 294 by O'Hare watching, I think, a 747 take off.
We're all idiots.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
That's one way to be a community.
Or whenever I come in from Michigan, I take the Skyway, and that goes right by the Gary Airport. And now, of course, nothing's going on. But, you know, I always have to check and see if there's an airplane out there.
Yeah.
Whatever. I fly over the top of Gary. That's my spot every time I go that way. I always fly over the top of Gary.
Well, I love flying over the top of O'Hare, although you got to have permission to do that.
That's something next on my bucket list. I really want to do that, fly over the top of O'Hare.
Well, how about landing at O'Hare? You can do that.
I actually did that back in March.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
On the Saturday of St. Patrick's Day at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was the only traffic there.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, if you file to Piatone,
okay,
Echo Oscar November, and you have a plane that can climb,
yeah,
they'll give you over the top.
Really?
It depends on the traffic, but you hit, right, they'll vector you northeast and northwest till you get to at least 5,000 feet, and you'll be 5 or 6 going over the top.
You know, come September, I'm supposed to be going down to a fly-in in Frasca Field down by Champaign,
yeah,
with my fraternity, and I really want to try that, fly over the top of O'Hare.
Yeah, it's cool. So you just mentioned fraternity.
Yeah.
We're kind of going to bounce around a little bit. So is this a fraternity like AE Pi, or is this a aviation-specific fraternity?
This is an aviation-specific fraternity, and you can tell by the name, Alpha Eta Rho, Aero.
Oh.
Yeah, co-ed aviation fraternity. We're in a bunch of different colleges throughout the country, and in fact, and they're starting one in Australia, so international. I think we have one in South Korea. The biggest one is at Western Michigan University, okay, Theta Chapter. We just had our national convention. But we do a lot of aviation activities and fun things, and maybe some non-aviation ones, bring in a ton of different speakers from the industry. I'm sure a lot of the speakers that come on the show we would love to have in. Go on different tours. In fact, right now I'm trying to set up a tour at Chicago Air Traffic and Route Center back in, I think it's Elgin or Aurora.
Aurora,
okay, yeah. I always get them mixed up.
Yeah.
And then we also have, you know, fun events as well, too.
So how many people are members of that fraternity here at Washington or Western Michigan?
We have about 70 members, and the college itself is 700 students, so we're a tenth of the college.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Okay, like if I'm coming by through Western Michigan, can I stop in the fraternity house to say I'm a pilot even though I'm not an AD
hour?
AHP.
That's actually the letters.
Oh.
But we don't have a house. We are a business fraternity. So not like, you know, Beta House or any of those
Animal House.
Yeah, Animal House, yeah. Not like those kind of things. So no actual house, just a straight business. Now, we do like to have fun as well.
But not drinking and flying.
Not drinking and flying.
That's good to hear.
Maybe drinking water and flying.
There you go.
Yep.
And nothing, it's kind of like those skydivers at Rochelle, RPJ. I think they go do their thing, and then when they're done, they go drinking.
We go skydiving every year.
Oh, my God.
The week before finals in the spring, we have what's called Final Fall. So we actually drive down to Ottawa and go to Skydive Chicago and jump out of a perfect...
And you like that?
You know, the only reason why I did it was because all my friends were doing it, and I would never hear the end of it.
Your friends jumped off of a bridge. I don't know. Did your parents ever say that to you?
Yeah.
And
the funny thing, it's different. It's not the same.
And actually, one of my other friends got jump certified. So after doing that, so that really spurred his interest. But it's a lot of fun. I'll probably enjoy it the second time around. The first time was a little bit much. I enjoyed the flight of the Twin Otter more than I think the actual jump.
Was the static line jump, or did you free fall? Or
you know, I think we free fall. I really don't know, but we jumped out of 13.5.
Wow.
So. That was pretty high.
I don't know.
It's like, you know, when I was younger, I always said I'd like to go skydiving, but it's just, I'm not interested in jumping out of a plane.
Yeah, exactly. And when I was younger, and I might have told this on the show, I had a choice. I was either going to do scuba diving or skydiving, and skydiving was $75, and scuba diving was $20, so I picked scuba diving. That was the only reason, because it was $55 cheaper for the semester. And I wouldn't have mind back then. I used to do spins and all that crazy stuff in the plane. And of course, at age 20, 21, you're immortal, right?
Right. Now, actually, I would rather fly the airplane that the jumpers are jumping out of.
Yeah,
a couple of my friends
are
doing that. I'll like to push them out, or, you know, do that kind of stuff.
That's cool. So what's next? What's the dream?
You know, back when I was a little kid, I've always wanted to fly for United Airlines, the 777. You know, who knows now? Maybe it's corporate. Maybe it's airlines. Basically, whatever will hire me. My next aviation goal is to get my CFI and CFII. Probably going to start that in August. Do a quick course in Colorado for 2 weeks. Get that done and out of the way.
Well, you won't get that done at Western Michigan?
No, typically all the students go elsewhere for their CFIs. It's
That's
cheaper.
Interesting.
Yep.
Why is that?
You know, it's cheaper, and at Western it's about a semester long, and you can get a CFI in 2 weeks, 3 weeks at, you know, accelerated courses.
That makes sense. I mean, you spent 4 years there. It's like, you know.
And they don't mind. Not that it would matter.
Actually,
but
I talked to our dean about this, and he actually enjoys it because he always likes to hear what other people are thinking and teaching, and it could only do good.
Wow, that's cool.
But ultimately, my next aviation goal is either get my glider, besides the CFI, I really like to do that, or there's not too many places that have this, but a multi-engine float seaplane rating. That would be something really cool. I really want to fly a Twin Otter or a Twatter.
Twatter?
Yep, that's what everyone calls it.
Hey, that reminds me. I got to write that down. Look at number three. Here's a new one, too.
Oh. Speaking of which, I want to give my tail plan as well.
Well, there's a little
Don't give the name of the business
I'm
here.
I'm not, no.
Yeah, I got my tailwheel endorsement, and it was so long ago, I want to go with an instructor again if I found myself in it.
Yeah.
It's just the landings, right? Everything else was fine.
Yeah. You know, I've been in one tailwheel airplane after I got my commercial multi. My instructor, who owns an Aranca Champ, he took me up for a free flight, and that was a lot of fun. That was the first time I ever took off and landed on grass, and obviously the first time in a tailwheel airplane.
How is that plane? I always look at pictures of those online and everything.
I'd love to have a cub in the club.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, the seaplane was a Piper Cub, actually.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. But I'm sure a tailwheel cub and a cub on floats are quite different.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I want to get that this summer, and I can't believe it's July already, or will be in tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, that just blows my mind.
3 hours.
Oh, my God, it's after 9 o'clock already. But I want to get the glider rating, so maybe you and I can run over
to Sky Soaring. Yeah, that's actually something that the Explorers did, too. We did a couple of flights over there. That was a lot of fun.
On the website, it says it's like you got to join for the day, and they really charge you $125.
Yeah, to join, and then you can do that. Or I think you could join for the summer, and then it becomes pretty cheap. There's a place over by me in Michigan, in Marshall, Michigan, that does this.
Have you
gliders.
Ever, Alex, you like to get into a glider and try it?
I don't know.
You're still committal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't like bouncing around, so I mean, I don't know if that's... I mean,
quiet.
Very quiet.
But is it... I guess you get in the thermals. I don't know. I've never been in a glider, so I'll... except when they pulled an engine on me and my Piper, what was that, 140 way back when.
Piper Cherokee? Or Warrior?
Piper Warrior 140. Okay. That was before the Warrior came out.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the two seats, and then in the back were like kids' seats.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was the trainer that we used.
All the little Piper products, they all blend in my mind. I can never tell them apart.
Yeah. No, it's us. someday we'll sit down and talk. I worked at a paper dealer. That was how it came out.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was where I worked at the Iowa City Flying Service.
Okay. I mean, I know you were there. I just didn't know it was a Piper dealer that you were
at. We flew everything in it in one Charlie Fox, Iowa City Flying. And so it was, we had a Twin Comanche, we had an Aztec, we had a Navajo, we had Warriors after they came out, 140s until then. We didn't have Archers. Went right to the Arrows, Lances. It was a blast.
No, the first three planes, I like all three of them.
I know you do. As you looked at them. How about, have you ever looked at a Geronimo?
Oh, yeah. That is the that version. There was some special version that they made.
I think they had like 150 horse engines and stuff. Great trainer.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the Geronimo was one that they actually put bigger motors on it.
No, I don't think so. I think the Geronimo, boy, if Stan's listening, or anyone listening, maybe you can tweet in what engines were on a Piper Geronimo.
Yeah, I
thought there was the Apache.
I thought there was the Apache. Then they had some that had more horsepower than the Apache, and I thought that was the Geronimo.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I thought that was only came as the Aztec after that.
Yeah, well.
We'll find out. Actually, I could probably look it up as we talk.
But that's no fun.
Yeah, it is. Always answering aviation questions.
If someone tweets it, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, someone tweets it. See, this is where I miss Al, because he's like a tweeting machine. I just kind of said, we got a show tonight, and that was it. So I don't even know how to do this stuff. That's why I look at you, Josh. Maybe we say, if you know what the engines the Geronimo had, tweet at just the hashtag, right?
Yep. Or you probably just tweet at me, Blaine's Planes.
BlainsPlanes, right?
No E on the last name. BlainsPlanes.
Yeah. Oh, I got it. Okay.
Yep. No E on the last name.
I'm on the last name. Okay. Well, we'll do that, or hashtag Simple Flight, and we'll get it.
Sounds cool.
Sounds cool. So, are you in town for the summer? Or
actually, just for today, I drove in, for the show.
Oh, nice!
I also decided
to
fly today. You know, great day to go fly, and then drive back. Literally, I'm getting in the car and driving back to Michigan. I wish I was flying back. That would be so much quicker.
You know what I'm
so
doing this week? My youngest son is flying on Southwest from Kansas City to come see. Actually, he's coming to see his friends, and while he's here, he'll see us. That's the way it works, by the way.
Right.
You're lucky he's got friends here, then.
Well, this is where he went to high school. All his high school friends are coming back, or some of the important ones. But no, I have a great relationship with that son, and he's flying into Midway, and he said, can you pick me up? And I said, absolutely, because you know what I'm thinking.
Pick him up in the airplane.
Pick him up in the airplane. Well, that's classy. You know, that'll be fun for me. I actually have only flown into Midway once or twice.
Really? I did my long instrument cross country there. It's Midway.
Oh, okay. I thought long instrument. Oh, from Western Michigan?
From Western, yeah. That's a really popular destination for students. They fly down to Fort Wayne, pick up the Goshen 5 arrival that starts at Fort Wayne, takes you right into Midway. You stop, turn off the airplane, have some Giordano's pizza, get another box, bring it back. And when you land in Battle Creek, and it's still warm and it smells really good.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I like this Western Michigan. They know how to do it. 727. What's that?
Should do it now.
Yeah. We should. No, well, maybe that's what I'll do. Actually, so I'm thinking I'm going to go to Signature, because that's my fear, is the fees. But Signature, because we're a customer of Signature here, I'm hoping that they'll help us out.
Yeah, I know there was a $7 landing fee,
a
$10 handling fee, and that basically, they really didn't do anything for that $10. I parked the airplane myself, and they chalked it, but that was it. And then I think a $30 servicing fee, and that gets waived with fuel.
Yeah, that's from the FBO. The other thing's from the city.
Right, the $7 landing fee, that's from the city. But if you do a touch and go, I don't believe you have to pay.
Well, so maybe my son can just run alongside and hop on.
Right, right. You know, I'm sure the TSA will really appreciate that.
Yeah, and actually, when I landed at O'Hare, we did a full stop taxi back.
Okay.
We did not get a fee.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I was waiting with heated breath for the bill when I did the touch and go at O'Hare and didn't get anything.
Yet.
It's
lost in the mishmash.
Right.
That's a technical term, by the way.
Yeah, this bureaucracy of City of Chicago.
Maybe they sold it to the same people that do the parking meters.
Probably. Yeah. Or they they got the bill and they bulldozed it, you know, just like Migs Field.
Oh, ba-dum-boom.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. So how much do you fly when you're not flying for school when you're in Western Michigan?
You know, I stopped flying over there, so now I'm back with the club. I've been flying with the club, so just maintaining my currency.
The local club here?
Yeah, Leading Edge? Actually, yeah, sorry, Leading Edge, yep.
Yeah. Because we don't see you that much. So.
No, unfortunately. But I flew today, so I upped my currency with that, so another 3 months for that. In the Dakota, I want to get checked out in the SR-22 as well as the Skyro. That's looks like some sweet airplanes.
Oh man, you should go up with me in the Skyro. I was there today. It was just sitting there, and it just was calling my name. Fly me, fly me.
And you flew it.
And I flew it. That was pretty tricky winds for that thing. That's the one thing, these smaller, lighter planes that really can play havoc when there's a 90-degree crosswind. I guess that happens all the time, though. It was fun, though.
That's cool.
Yeah, I really want to take the SR-22 up to Cirrus and tour the facilities up there. I think that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, and actually, we should do it kind of as a flyout. You get a lot of people jump in, share the cost.
Yeah.
We need to do more of that.
Yeah,
too.
I did my first flyout last month when we went out to...
St. Louis?
No, Iowa.
Dubuque.
Dubuque, yes. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Took the 310 out there. Got to sit right seat in that, and then flew the Dakota coming back.
Yep. How did she start today?
Started fine.
You all right? we have this. Finally, we got the right battery in there, and everything's working great in that airplane.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I missed that, the Buick one. I forgot what I had going on that morning.
It was fun to fly, but the restaurant left a lot to be desired. But it was good. We met another club out there.
Yeah.
It's a new destination. Something put in the logbook.
Right, and that's what I try to do. Every time I try to fly, I try to go to a new airport. That's really key for me. A lot of my friends who go in their cross countries, they'll go to the same airport maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and you know, I get really bored with that.
Oh, you get to pick where you want to go?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have a list of, we have a list of airports that we can go to, and then within each lesson, there's parameters of those lessons. Sometimes they may have to be 50 miles, sometimes they may have to be 100, and then, of course, the 250 long cross country.
Right.
But you can pick pretty much whatever airport you want to go. So I always try to go to a different airport that I've never been to.
That's nice. Yeah. How many airports have you landed at, Alex?
Oh, that's a good question. But quite a few different ones, actually.
Well, actually, since you went to the West Coast and Southwest, that helped build them up.
And even here, I remember I was up with, you remember my buddy Tony Rohde?
Yep.
I think there was one day that me and him went up on a Saturday. He goes, "Where do you want to do?" I said, "I just want to hit a bunch of airports." I think I hit 7 or 8 of them that day, different ones.
We live a blessed life, don't we?
So just kind of all over the place. I said, I never landed here, never landed there. But it was kind of funny because you guys talked about Rochelle, and I was looking at I was flying out one night out by myself, and I saw Rochelle was out there. You know, I saw it on the map, and I said, okay, well, let me just land there. And, looking at the chart, I'm just like, okay, yeah, there's no taxiways here. Is what I said. It looks a little different at night, you know, when you're just out there all by yourself. And so I landed there, and that was the first time I think that was the first airport I ever landed that didn't have any taxiways, and it was at nighttime. And it was just like, okay, where am I? Can I just turn around this way? Okay, go back that way. And it was just like, you know, is there anybody else out there coming in? Maybe you're listening for it, but it was just weird to me because it just wasn't. I just never did it before.
You know, I always had these airports that were kind of, again, I'll say calling my name. I fly to Iowa a lot, and I always look at Sierra Fox Yankee, SFY, right on the Mississippi River on the Illinois side. And it's one of those, I play the game when I'm flying, okay, if I lose my engine, where am I going to land? And that one always comes up as I approach the Mississippi because I think, okay, that's there. I'd never, ever been there, and I was with Stan, a former 777 captain for United, and Amuni that he has partial ownership in. So we said, okay, let's go there. So I landed there. It was, you know, a little hole in the wall, but it was great. It's just that I've always seen it from the air every time I go there to Iowa. And so I think it's smart. It's fun to say, you know what, I'm going to make a stop that I don't normally do to that one.
You said you play the game if your engine goes out. So I just have to ask the question just because you go to school.
Yeah.
So you a fan of the single or the twin?
You know, the Seminole was a great airplane. If I had a twin, I would rather have a more powerful airplane. That thing cruised at the same exact airspeed as the Cirrus, but burned twice the amount of fuel. I really like the Cirrus a lot, It was a nice airplane, cruised pretty fast and pretty easy to fly. Now, if I had a Seneca 5 or maybe a 421 or
a
310, yeah, that was a great airplane. I would really enjoy that. Now, if maybe Cirrus made a twin airplane, that would be pretty interesting to see, too.
So I go continue the thought, Alex.
So do you like the twin better or the single?
Are you thinking safety?
I'm just curious. I mean, if you had to buy one or the other, which would you have?
And you could afford one or the other.
Well, if I could afford one or the other, right now, you know, my bank account has, you know, $20, and I'm just like every other student. Probably the single right now. I really do like the Cirrus, maybe an SR-22. Now, if I had a lot more money, then the twin.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, Alex. You are still considering the twin.
Yeah, I still like the idea of the twin. I was actually talking about with Al last week. You know, just some thought process and stuff like that. Just, you know, because I'm always looking around, and I gotta go for a ride in one of those baby Barons, I told him, and just to see what that's like. And you know, I did join ABS, and you know, they do have, you know, a list of owners there and guys that you can get together with. What do you call it? Like an ambassador program that you can get together with some folks and take a ride on their planes, and just to see what that's like, and see how that plane is. And you know, I like it because, you know, the baby Baron versus that the 58 model, I guess, is a little bit quicker. And you know, that's why I want my daughter to go for a ride in some of these other ones, just so she sees the cabin configuration and that sort of stuff. You know, but I mean, I don't know. I like to take that up. I talk about it with Al. I said, okay, well, if you have a single, I'd want a turbocharge. I said, but if I have a twin, I don't think I need the turbos. I can live with the normally aspirated, and you know, I just start, you know, penciling everything together and stuff like
fun
that.
It's fun to window shop.
You know, speaking of twins, I actually just saw the tweet from my friend Max about the Piper Geronimo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 180 Lycomi engines on those.
Oh, my goodness. I thought it was 150.
See, I told you they had bigger motors on them.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm wondering now, what was the 150? If maybe there wasn't. I thought there was an early Piper twin.
Was there a 150 twin? That's pretty low.
Look at the Diamond. Was what, 135 when they first came out?
The Twin Star, really?
Yeah, when it first came out.
Really?
I didn't know that.
But I thought that was the deal with the Apache. I think one has 150, and the other one had a little bigger motor than I think the 180s, and I think that's what they did with the. You know, with the other light twin that Piper made, and let me see, they had that Miller conversion, where I think they had 200 horsepower on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it was the Miller conversion. Anyway, you know, whatever. You know.
Okay, I'm looking at Piper Apache while we're talking now, but. So Piper Apache.
Yeah, the Comanche has 180s, and then they had the Miller conversion, which I think were 200 horsepower turbos, I think.
While this is coming up, guess what I got as a gift?
What's that?
I'm sorry, the Piper Apache 4-6 and the later Aztec. Golly, they just don't want to make it easy to read this in terms of. I'm not going to take... This is taking too much time on the radio here. So, yeah, it's that actually is heavier. The Aztec was 250 horse. I don't know. I'll have to look it up later. Guess what I got as a gift?
Hmm.
A ride in a multi-engine airplane.
What kind?
A B-24.
Ooh.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I got it as a gift, and you go to... some website, and they do the tour on the way to Oshkosh in the summer. I think I actually already missed all the stuff. Like, I got the gift a couple months ago, but I'm going to find out where it is. Matter of fact, I think it stops in St. Louis soon, at Spirit of St. Louis. So I've never done that. I'm really appreciative of the person that gave me that gift.
Actually, last year up at Oshkosh with the Explorers, they provided free rides in the B-25 and Fifi, the B-29, and I was lucky enough to be selected to go in the B-29.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the B-25 and Panchito with one of the last surviving Doolittle Raiders up front. I was in the back in the tail gunner's position, and you can see, because we were flying with Fifi, she was maybe 200, 300 yards off our tail, and she was just right in line, and it was probably one of the most... moving experiences I've encountered in aviation. That was a lot of fun. Loud, yeah. Too. Very loud.
I should bring my noise-canceling headset.
I think so. They may have provided you with headsets, but I would probably choose the noise-canceling ones.
Yeah, or maybe earplugs. No, right, I can't wait to try it. I know it's something I didn't even think about doing. Matter of fact, when I saw it used to be you could go up for an hour for, like, it's like $500 or a half an hour.
Right.
And then there was the P-51, which was like $1,200 for a ride. And I know, it sounds great, but I'd rather fly for a few hours in a Cirrus.
Now, can you log the B-24 flight? Is it a instructor, or are they going to let you fly it? Or?
Oh, no. I think it's just sit in the back. I guess they probably have different positions like you did. And
right.
Maybe I can figure out how to get into.
That would be something really interesting to have in your logbook, B-24 or B-25.
What is your favorite logbook entry for whatever reason?
Actually, I have a really good story with that. I have an MD-11 flight simulator with a hold in my logbook from FedEx.
Wait a minute. So when I flew the 777 sim, can I log that?
I was actually what sim was it?
At United Airlines.
I believe so. If the instructor was an ATP, then that counts. I believe
well,
so.
Well, yeah, so I was sitting in the right seat was in the right seat was a regular first officer. Our friend, the captain, was behind me. He's a line check at Bob.
Okay.
And his flight instructor was there, too.
You know, I believe so.
I'm going to hand that over, man. I would love that.
Getting back to the fraternity, we always do a trip down to FedEx because our national president is a captain for FedEx on the MD-11, and he always lets us go on these on a tour. And in fact, FedEx donated, I think, a couple hours in the MD-11 sim for us to use. And this was back when I was getting my commercial multi, and we were constantly doing instrument approaches. So I was keeping current with the approaches. Now I never really did a hold. So it was about a couple weeks before I was about to end that currency, and I reached around and went back to the instructor, and I asked, hey, can you show me a hold? Can we do a hold? And I had my logbook there, and he said, sure. So I flew the hold, marked it off. It's in my logbook. And then 3 weeks later, I went for my commercial multi-license, and the examiner, who's been flying for maybe 40, 50 years, didn't believe it, and he was so surprised because he never saw anything like that.
Well, you know, I have that. I took a helicopter lesson. I didn't have my logbook, so that's not in there. I want to add that. But my favorite is one of two. One when I flew in Maui, and I rented a Skyhawk with an instructor, and I flew to three different islands, so that was pretty cool. And then the other one was when I soloed, if you will, or PIC into Oshkosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a nice one.
Yeah, I still love my first solo, November 14th, 2010. That's something that
you've done a lot in the last couple of years.
Yeah, something that always remember. I still remember that flight, and I still remember the day, and still remember the instructor. That was something to remember.
You know, I remember. I couldn't tell you the tail number, but I remember my guy stepping out, and it's just like you always hear. You look to the right and say, "Oh my God, no one's there."
That's what I said. I was abeam. I said, I looked at the runway, and I looked at the seat, and I was like, "Oh my God." And good thing they weren't recording my voice because I said some unfamily appropriate things then too.
Wish your mom's listening.
Oh yeah.
What's your all this talk that you guys are doing? Again, we can't talk about this on the radio, but I have a fourth name here.
What does that say?
Oh gosh.
For the plane. That's
right. Yeah. So what's your favorite or I'll say favorite logbook entry?
Oh, that's I think when I flew with Al in the snow for 2 hours in IMC going west, you know, that was pretty cool. And it's so different when you're in IMC, obviously with your instructor, versus if you're out there alone and you're about to get into something and you turn away from it or whatever the case may be. And I think I was going to Burlington one day, and I was stopping for gas, and I think I got into a cloud, but I got out of it right away. I mean, I just turned, and it was just like, but man, it feels different.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You know, yeah.
I mean, even though it's maybe 15 seconds or whatever the case may be, or we all flew the Lambert.
Yeah.
You know, and I was climbing out, and I was with George was next to me. My wife was in the back, And, you know, we were going to get above the, it was bumpy. So yeah, we were going to be slower on top. I think it was what the deal was, but you know, it's be more comfortable for my wife. And, you know, so there's a big hole in the sky there, you know, so we're just going through and yeah, I just get in the cloud, you know, and I'm probably there, you know, for about 15 seconds or something. And, you know, but it's just like, yeah, I'm fine. But you know, you see the big bright light, the sun that's coming through, and, I mean, I was okay, but I mean, I can see how you can be a little unnervy, you know. I mean, George is instrument rated and that sort of thing, you know, so that's, you know, so you feel, you know, you're with somebody, so you feel comfortable, but right. Man, it's, but you know, when I was with him flying 2 hours, you know, out west at one point and that one leg, and it's just like, it was kind of cool to watch the snow just coming through, you know, just blowing past you and everything. And, yeah, it was
when I was getting my private in Iowa way back when, I remember just, you'd see little puffs that was maybe a second at the most in the cloud, but you still tightened up like, yeah. Is this going to be solid when you hit it?
Right. No, exactly. And there's just some cool stuff along the way. I think the trip itself, there was just, I think, this isn't something for the logbook, but I guess when we were in Albuquerque and watching, you know, a half a dozen hornets take off,
That was neat.
And, I know I had put that on Spark Reel, and like I said, I was a Spark Reel junkie there for a little while, watched more videos of myself than anything, and everybody from the club that's out, you know, and that sort of stuff, but it was, pretty cool.
Now I have a question for you guys. Who is the most famous, airplane or flight that you've shared the air traffic control frequency with? I'll go, with mine first. I was flying from, I think, Jackson back to Battle Creek in Michigan, and I check in and I hear on the frequency Air Force 2, meaning that the vice president was on board, and they were going from Flint, Michigan to Grand Rapids. Not that that was probably the coolest thing that I ever experienced on the radio for that matter.
Yeah, I just love hearing people I know. I guess I had my brush with fame. I guess that's the right way to say it. I was up at Madison and, you know, paying for my gas at the counter, and the guy next to me, you know, was Jeff Giles.
Okay, yeah.
Right, from Sully's Flight. And I go, really? Are you the Jeff Giles? Well, I'm Jeff Giles. And I, of course, he looked just like him, and he's from Wisconsin. So he's just a nice guy and all that, but it was just like, oh my God, I've been seeing you on the news. You know, it was kind of cool that way.
Yeah, I know nobody.
No.
You know nobody. Okay. You and I were talking once on the radio. You knew me.
I knew you. I mean, it's kind of cool when you actually hear the other people that you know that are around. And I think I was landing in Madison, and it was, my buddy was taking off, I think off of 1-8 over there, if I'm right.
They have a 1-8, yeah?
Yeah, 1-8. And, I think I was coming in behind him and 3-6 Tango Bravo, I think it was. And I was like, see ya, Nate. And he goes, see ya. He goes, hey, man. You know, and it was the guy that actually turned me on to flying. You know, he was the guy that actually took me for a ride in his Bonanza, and I was sitting in back. He was doing some instrument approaches with his instructor. He goes, what do you think, Alex? And I was like, geez, it's all Chinese, man. And he goes, well, he goes, if I can do it, you can. And and so that's how it was, and it was just it was pretty cool. And then being in that was the first general aviation aircraft that was in. So I think part of the problem is that you end up getting spoiled. Because it is a little bit bigger plane. It's club seating. You're sitting in the back. You're very comfortable. Yeah. And, you know, just, you know, I don't know. Just everything about it was different, you know.
I always like just, like, going to Madison, and then you hear a controller that you knew from a different airport. They've now moved.
Yeah.
Hey, Zach. You know, so-and-so, that type of thing. So it's, I don't know. The community aspect of flying is wonderful. So here we are, and we, you know, you're in it, Josh, and let's see, what do we have? We have 24 more minutes. I don't know that we've answered the question. I mean, you're found your passion. You stuck with it. You've got your ratings. You're going into your last year of a 4-year degree program at Western Michigan. I still don't know that I have an answer to how do we make more Josh planes out there, because they're out there. They just don't know it in many respects.
You know, that's the $10 million question that, you know, I, quite frankly, could give you my advice. I don't know if that's right. I think it's get more kids at the airports flying the airplanes, and I think once they're hooked, they will be hooked.
So that would suggest maybe what we tried to do last year, which was get your solo. Instead of going to summer camp, come to the airport, and for the same amount of money, if you meet the requirements of the FAA, you will solo an airplane before you go back to high school next year.
I think that's a great opportunity, because then you get people like kids who go back to high school, and of course high school is very competitive at that age. You get them saying, you know, I've flown an airplane all by myself, or I've flown a $70,000 airplane, and you only drive a $3,000 minivan, and then you get these kids trying to one up each other, and then
That feels funny to play to that aspect of it. I mean, to me, it's just, it's the cool factor, but it's not from a competitive.
But then you need to think of, a 14 or 15 or 16-year-old and their mindset as well.
Yeah, 16. Yeah, I don't have my driver's license yet, but I've flown an airplane.
Exactly. That's a really cool thing to show, and I'm pretty sure the chicks love it.
Yeah, that's like a magnet, right?
They do? Where was I in all this?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, I got a question.
All right.
Well, it's not a question. You've been to Oshkosh, every single year. You've gone. I've never went.
I can't believe that.
Really?
And I think this year I actually want to go.
You should.
Because I can actually do it this year, is what it seems like. And I'd like to fly there.
Absolutely.
Is that crazy or no?
No.
Someone told me no, you probably shouldn't. You know, you should probably go with somebody first. Or, you know, my wife and I want to go, but we just want to go for the day and come back.
You know, and that's what I do. I'll go with you.
That sounds good.
And I can sit in the back. You and Sonia can sit in the front.
No. She doesn't want to sit in front.
All right.
She'd rather sit in back anyway.
So I can sit in the back. I mean, in the front. If you sit left seat.
So where are you going with this? You're both sitting in the back?
I want to sit in the back with Sonia, and then you let us know when we get there. No, so that works great. You should have somebody else.
Right.
For keeping your eyes out the window.
Because you've flown there before. I know that because I know you've been there, and I want to go for the day, and that's the whole beauty of the flying thing. I can actually fly somewhere, come back, and sleep in my own bed that night. Which is what I want to do. And so, if you want to go, that'd be great because I had never been there.
Yeah, it's a wonderful experience.
I always really enjoyed it. Now, keep in mind, my experience is going to be a little bit different than the average visitor there, just because I'm volunteering. I really haven't been able to see a lot of the shops or the forums that they have. However, I get to see a lot different aspect. Now, also keep in mind, I think that you should bring another person along too. It gets pretty hectic. I've seen some near misses and almost near crashes. And
isn't a near miss kind of like a near crash?
Okay, yeah. I will give
it was
you that.
A miss. It was a near hit.
Yeah.
Okay, I got this question for you.
Sure.
Because you're volunteering and you're taking down tail numbers and this and that, what does it look like when I know all these guys that fly from Rockford, all those bonanzas meet, there are like 100 of them, and then they all come in together? What's that like?
It's pretty wild. I really enjoyed that, seeing it. It's really easy with identifying the airplane because they're just like bonanza, 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 bonanza. So that really helps with that.
Yes. Have you ever seen those YouTube videos of how they stage it?
I've watched them, and it's kind of funny because I was showing them to my daughter, and, the person that's holding the camera shows all the planes in front of them, which, a row of five or six of them or something like that. And then when I see her face when the guy turns the camera all the way around, he's basically up in the front, and he's got, like, a row of 30 more people behind him. I guess what I'm asking is you've seen it. I'd like to be there prior to them getting there. I'd love to see that.
I think they come in on the Saturday before it starts.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And you can go early. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. You go Friday, Saturday, whatever. Yeah, the Cherokees do that too. We know someone that leads that Cherokee mission, where they're Cherokees to Oshkosh or whatever it's called. I would love to because I've seen videos of it, and it's just 100 dots in the sky coming at you.
Right.
How cool is that? And it's Piper Cubs would have been cool to see that when they did that in the 70s.
Yeah,
or the DC-3s when they had that a couple years ago. I think it was the 75th anniversary of the DC-3, so they had a bunch of them coming in.
Oh, my God. That just sounds so freaking cool.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Now, keep in mind also, there's a lot of people taking pictures of your airplane, so if you do something stupid, there's a record. I was on a taxiway a couple years ago, and I saw a pilot who didn't want to wait in line, and they actually took off going the opposite direction on the taxiway.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And so hopefully he lost his license or something.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. So, Alex, I guess bottom line is, yeah, it, and the other thing about going to Oshkosh, it, I think it's really cool to pre-flight it, to pre-brief it.
Yeah.
You know, go through the 30-page booklet or whatever and have all your signs and have... I wrote down 8.5 by 11 of cliff notes, essentially. Okay, I'm going to put this in the... in the Garmin, I'm going to do turn this here. At this point, I'm pushing this button. I may have scripted it out so I wouldn't miss a step, including when you have to turn off your transponders when you get within X number of miles, and you will still on the Cirrus get traffic. It drives you nuts, so you have to pull the circuit breaker, the Skywatch system.
Yeah.
Because it's just driving you nuts. The thing's yelling at you for the last 30 miles because it's still in... interrogating those that didn't turn off they turn off the mode C or something. Okay. We just got a tweet. Great radio show. I'm headed to Oshkosh too on the second Saturday. If we can get a few club members to fly together, okay. We got some people want to go. I'll make sure the right day.
Yeah, no, I'd like to go check it out. Like I said, yeah, if we go like on a Saturday, that's even better for me.
Well, Saturday be either before or the last Saturday of the show. I think it's Saturday or Sunday. Sunday.
I think it's
Monday through Sunday.
I think that's, yeah, Monday through Sunday.
I think that's right.
I'm pretty sure.
I've got to be there Tuesday, though. I'm actually being asked to be on a panel for AOPA, which is kind of cool. I'm excited about that on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
Now, to all the pilots out there that are flying in, when I worked as a marshaller, we would always see the pilots who forgot to read the NOTAM and forgot to print out the sign of where they were going. So once they got off the runway, they would hastily write on the back of a piece of their paper.
In a ink, right?
In a little pen. And hold it up, and you had to run over the airplane, stop the flow of traffic, and ask them where they're going. Please, please, please print out a page that had the bold letters. They have it right in the NOTAM. Please do that. Don't, forget about that.
Yeah.
Marshall is where thank you.
Well, there's so much that people, and we're getting off topic, but right. I guess we're in the hangar flying segment anyway. There's so many people that I hear are responding on the radio, which, of course, they're not. It's obvious to me they have not read the NOTAM because they're treating it like a regular rival.
I would say the same thing, too.
Yeah, I have no clue.
That's why you need, for your first time...
I need you.
Or you need someone.
I need you.
Okay, I'd love to do it. It is a blast. And then to put that OSH in your logbook is so cool. Especially, as a matter of fact, we should go.
Because you always talk about that T-shirt. I flew into Oshkosh.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that story.
I have not.
So essentially, I flew with Renee and his 310.
Okay.
The year before, I flew PIC in there. And I saw a shirt they sold, I flew into Oshkosh. And I loved it, but I never felt that I earned the right to wear it. So I put it in a drawer. I said, I cannot wear this until I do it myself.
Now, what happens if you flew into Oshkosh, the airport, but not during the air show? Because I've done that once.
Ah, that doesn't count.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. One of our the explorers, the leader, he's a leader also with the EA and the FAA coordinating between the two up there. So he was flying in for a meeting in May of a couple years ago, and he flew in on Baron. So I got to sit up front with that, and it was in May, and IFR day, and there was nothing going on. It was very weird to see an airport and the grounds just completely empty.
Yeah. No. And have you been there? You've been to Oshkosh, right?
Yeah, that was my cross-country was Pewaukee to Madison to Oshkosh back.
Oh, great one.
That was my – and you said you flew into Baron. How was the Baron?
Now he's thinking about airplanes he wants to buy.
You know, I really enjoyed it. Now, keep in mind, this was – just like 2 weeks after I got my private pilot's license. So, I never flew a multi-engine airplane. I never flew IMC. That was the first time that I actually was in the first seat in the front on an ILS all the way down to minimums. So that was definitely interesting and pretty eye-opening.
Interesting. That's actually one of the coolest things.
Right.
I know that got you excited for the instrument rating, right?
Yeah, that's what got me excited. I was taken off out of here one day, and I saw one of our CFIs at the club. I said, hey, you want to go grab dinner? And we went over to that Mexican place in Wisconsin. I forget the airport over there. What is that airport? We used to get the Cirrus serviced over there. Not by Madison.
Watertown?
Yeah,
Watertown.
Watertown. So He goes, you see the fog over Eugene over there? I'm like, hey, you're IFR. What's the big deal? I said, let's just go. So we go. And then, but we're closed in now almost, essentially, on the way back home. And, you know, we had to pick an alternate, which was DuPage. And basically, that was the first IFR lesson I had. And Pawaukee was down to minimums. And it was, man, it was the coolest thing. I mean, the fog was here. You're on top of the fog, basically. And it's just like, I think I explained, it's like Batman. And, you know, you see all the lights underneath you, and, you know, you just come through the clouds. And, I remember he said to me, you know, when you had the, you know, the runway environment in sight, as they say, and it's like, yeah, so, you know, shut the autopilot off. And he's like, and don't miss it. I said, I won't. And, yeah, it was cool. And I don't think I stopped talking about it for 20 or 30 minutes after it was done. Maybe at the time that was the coolest thing in my logbook when you guys were talking. You know.
Well, just yesterday I flew, and I learned a lesson. And it was coming into 1/6, and I had an 11-knot tailwind, and it was at circling minimums. And I always hear, don't do circle the land, always take the straight in, you know. And I said, you know what, it's at circling minimums, 11 knots kind of tends my limit where I don't want a tailwind. And so I said, I'll take the circle the land, even though everyone else had been doing the straight in. And it was, I mean, it ended up perfect and all that, but, you know, it was a little iffy. I had to stay very close to make sure I stayed in sight. And O'Hare put me on a right downwind for 3-4 rather than left, and the wind was out of the east. So when I turned base, I had a tailwind, so I overshot the runway and had to come back.
That actually happened to me today. The exact same thing.
But I was way off. It really pushed me. So I had to get, I slipped it down and touched down midfield. And I, you know, at that point it was no problem because it's a 5,000 foot runway. But, the lesson I taught myself at 11 knots, and it was slightly crossed, so it was probably less direct in terms of a component. I'm going straight in, especially if it's at circling minimums. I had nothing. I was literally at the base of the clouds the entire way around. I could not go up a foot.
Yeah, IFR into this airport seems really interesting only because you can only have the 1/6 approach, either VOR, GPS, or ILS.
Right. Yeah, because everything's also got Bravo in the way.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
How far are you along? We keep on hearing that. I haven't heard you getting your ticket yet.
Yeah, I haven't got my ticket yet because I'm an idiot.
I love the self-analysis.
Yeah, that's what it is. I haven't got back in there with Al. We talked about it last week, and he's like, you know, he's really chasing me. He goes, you know, we got to get going again. And I'm like, I know. I mean, I even went and took that weekend course over at Windy City, and I still didn't even take the test, to be honest with you. But, you know, I'm terrible, and I'm being nice about it.
Yeah.
Write
it down what you really think.
Yeah, I can't say it on the show. But you know, like Al says, he goes, you know, we take another big trip, he goes, you're basically finished. But I just haven't got back in there yet. And some things I had to take care of, personal side, which is just basically about done. He had to sell my mom's place because, like I said, she's in an assisted living, so that's done. That closes at the end of July and that sort of thing. So I just got to get some things.
And I have no place to talk because I keep telling people I'm going to get my commercial just because it's something to do. And I haven't taken the knowledge exam. I haven't taken any training. I did years ago, you know, some of the maneuvers. But
the knowledge exam for commercial, I thought that was pretty easy. Just a glory.
See you say that. That's 100 questions, and I start to close my eyes when I start getting into the FARs. And
it's no instrument written. I know that was the most difficult one I've ever taken.
Great.
What'd you score?
Initially, I got a 68.
Ooh.
Yeah. One question off because they put in maybe 5 icing questions that they just put in like that month. So none of the study guides had that. So then I went back and restudied, and I got an 85. So
is at Western Michigan, do they train you for that, or are you on your own for knowledge exams?
You're trained for that. You have ground lessons with your instructor. All the students can have prepware on the computer in the lab, and you can take any of the written exams that you could think of. I took, I think they had like ATP, hot air balloon. I tried that, lighter than air. I tried taking that, but we do have the prepware for the students to try.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I start listening, and I've been vocal on here how I really enjoy the King. I call them tapes even though they're no longer tapes, but I start to fall asleep when it gets to that commercial. You know, it's a glorified private, but it's so much.
That's what I really thought when I took it.
Yeah.
When I was listening to the King DVDs and for my private checkout, it was kind of funny. I think I may have told you this before, Mark, but that was actually my check ride, my oral and the check ride, which was almost identical.
No kidding.
Yeah, which was kind of funny. It's almost like the DPE listened to that video and then just kind of incorporated it.
Well, it's just the PTS and they.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. But I also listen. I also had that DVD for the ASA.
Yep.
For the oral check ride. And I got to be honest with you, when I was listening to that CD scared the hell out of me. Because it's like every possible question that the DPE can ask you is on that DVD. And I was just like, oh my God, how am I ever going to get through this? I don't know that answer. And it was nothing like that DVD. I don't know. You were about to say something, Josh. Yeah. I don't know if you felt the same way.
There is a YouTube video of Al Engelhart
in
the 1990s with 100,000 views, and it's an hour and a half long. And he asked every single type of question that he could possibly think of. I don't even know if it was a real check ride or not.
It was.
Oh, it was?
Because I said that guy had to be staged. I mean, he said no, it was real. And the guy nailed it. I mean, it was the most impressive oral exam. Oh, my God.
I tell my friends to go watch that video when they're preparing for their private check ride. You know, I don't even think that I could maybe pass an Al Engelhart check ride.
You might be listening. Be careful. You've not seen this?
I've heard about it. I actually.
You only need to listen to about 10 minutes, and you get the picture.
Yeah, right. I never went to. It's probably like he said. It's like the ASA tape, and that DVD scared the hell out of me more than anything.
Interesting. I know. I was talking to a friend of mine, member of the club that's out in L.A., and he's. Shepherd Air.
Yeah, they're great. That's what I'm going to be doing.
And it's like $10 or something like that. And you, but it takes you through all the questions.
Right. That's what a lot of my friends train with their CFI runs, because those are pretty difficult. Shepherd Air, I think they first give you like the answers, so you memorize the answers.
Yeah.
Then you go through the questions. It's pretty rigorous.
You got to go through three times, I think. They give the answers.
Something like that, yeah.
Then they give you a hint, and then they don't give you anything or something like that. I'm probably a little off.
And that's for what?
For any of your knowledge exams.
Oh. See, I just got the GLIM books, and I just went through them all.
I can't do GLIM. I need someone to talk to me. That's why I like the DVDs or the online courses. And the Kings... compared to Sporties and one person's opinion, I like John's humor. Martha, not so much, but you know, she's enthusiastic. But John, I just connect with his sense of humor.
You know, I never watched any of the King DVDs or videos. Never.
And to this point? Never. Actually, I think you heard one of them. Because I spoke to you guys at Aviation Explorers about communications, and I pulled up a video of his. Although it was just a...
I know we watched the Sporty DVDs a lot. That, I forgot who the guy was in that, but...
Rob, he's a air show...
Right, he does the Oshkosh air show, I think, right?
He does, he's
something
pretty
like
famous,
that.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting, but...
John, and the example I always use was for the commercial. Mm-hmm. And he says, can you change the center of lift? Not without a hacksaw. And it's that kind of humor, that corny stuff that I like so much. Well, guys, we are on final approach here with 5 minutes left before that awesome hour of 2200 local time.
I have a question.
You've got 5 minutes.
Oh, so. Great. I saw you sent the email out with the SIM. I haven't been to take a look at it yet.
You want to stop on the way out of here?
Yeah, maybe we can take a look. And that was a question I had, Josh. Is there any simulators you used at home or at school?
Home?
I mean, just like for personal use. I want to get something for the house. I just haven't yet.
I just had Microsoft Flight Simulator and joystick and throttle quadrant.
Okay.
I mean, that did its thing. I used that more for play than actually studying. I could... barrel roll a 747 that I couldn't do in real life, so that's what I would use that for. But in school, we have actual Frasca simulators for the Cirrus, and it's probably the world's largest video game 220-degree wraparound screens. They actually took an airplane. They chopped it in half. So they have the doors. They have everything, basically a Cirrus, from the wings forward, the cockpit-wise, including the engine cowling, with all the avionics. And you're in this little enclosure, and like I said, the 220-degree wraparound screens with the three projectors, and the instructors can do whatever they want to in the simulator. That's a great tool for pilots to learn as well as keep their skills up. Now, that's about $1 million, so I don't know if you're in the market for that.
I think I'd buy a plane.
Yeah, I think Eddie gets to swim. No, actually, so I've used the flight sims with the FSX, Flight Simulator 10, and all that. This new one we got, which is a touch screen.
You know, I was over there leaving for the flight today, and there was a gentleman using it, and I looked at it, and I thought it was quite
It was someone using it today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a young guy? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, Adam, probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, he's the one. Yeah, so it's what I like about this one, and it's I'll you know, give a little plug here, flythissim.com, exactly as it sounds, and they have this thing called a touch trainer. It's a BATD, meaning you can log time towards your ratings.
Really?
Or you can, without a CFI, you can be current on it. You can keep current shooting approaches on
really?
It. Really? Because it mimics the airplane exactly. So I configured a G2 SR22, because that's what we have in the club, mm-hmm. with the DFC-90, and the Avidyne system. Now, they have a Garmin 650. This one came with a 430. 650 isn't ready for release yet. But it's, you know, you to start it, you do the exact same thing. Bat 2, okay, no flap light. Bat 1, flap light comes on. Strobe, mixture, throttle, prime, pull back, hit the starter. And it's the same thing. You follow all the same procedures, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I really like the touch screen because at home, you know, I just have a mouse and the actual screen, so it kind of gets a little pain.
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but, you know, again, it, to me, and sometimes I use the autopilot just because it's a sensitive control.
Right.
And you just want to get the procedures down. They sell a visual system with 110-degree,
okay,
three screens, but we're not getting this for VFR. We're getting this for IFR.
Now I have actual X-Plane on my iPad here, so I like to play that. It's more.
That's
of a,
not the same
yeah,
thing.
It's more though. Of a game
it's
than
a game.
Actually.
I
like,
do that. Have you seen that?
No.
So yeah, I do that sometimes. Before you line up and land at Megs or things
I got
like
one that.
That
I use the space shuttle.
Right. Yeah. The same one as well too. It's always funny whenever I'm on a commercial flight, I always pull it out and everyone just looks at me weird, and because sometimes I'll, you know, do the C word, I'll crash and. They'll you know, look over their shoulders and be like, "What are you doing?"
I'm flying the plane here. You just don't
know
it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just yeah. Even the remote seat, they're all incapacitated up front. I take out my iPad in flight, and you're not supposed to have the GPS function on, but of course I do. I put it up against the window so I can get the GPS.
Actually, back in May, I was visiting family in Las Vegas, and coming back, you know, I had it on, but I actually looked at the back of the magazine, Hemispheres magazine, and they actually say which things are allowed in flight. They say GPS is allowed above 10,000 feet.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I use it for the taxi diagrams at O'Hare when I'm on the ground.
Yeah,
so I know.
Yeah, I had it all out. I followed the entire route. I looked at FlightAware before the flight and plugged in the entire routing, the altitude and the speeds, and I followed along. And it was really cool because if I was flying with my mom or my dad, you know, I'd be like, "We're going to be turning in 5, 4, 3, and then we would turn.
That's cool. Yeah. He sees all. He knows all.
Yeah. Black magic there.
Something like that.
Last time I was on, she made me shut it off. She said, "You're not supposed to have that." You know, I didn't know it said that in the back of the Hemispheres magazine.
Yeah, now let's take that page out. Here, I got permission from Josh.
Yeah.
Nope, leaving it on.
That's right. Well, yeah, that I see 2200 here on the clock. Al Waterloo, we missed you, but I think we got through 2 hours. I enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully you guys did too. Alex, thank you for sitting in for Alex.
No problem, man. Thanks for you're going to come with me to Oshkosh.
I'm going to come with you to Oshkosh, if nothing else. Yeah, we'll have a show on that. And I would tell you that, I think we just had a timeout on our browser, so as I'm getting notice here. But again, thank you, everyone. I hope you found it a good show, and we'll be back next Sunday night, 8 o'clock, as always. And until then, blue skies and tailwinds. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Here. It's that funny. It went dead just when
Fly this in. What is that?